Well, hello from Galesburg. Thank you all for joining us for tonight's phonecast. I'm Paul Stinas. I'm the Dean of Admission here at Knox. I'm the person who signed the letter in purple ink that offered your son or daughter admission to Knox College. And we're looking forward to hearing from parents tonight from across the country. There might also be a few international parents that will be joining us. If you'd like to ask a question tonight at any point in time, all you need to do is press *3 on your keypad. It's kind of like raising your hand. It won't interrupt us, but it will let us know that you have a question. Today actually kicks off about 10 days of virtual admitted student days. Now through April 30th, the admission office will be offering a series of virtual panels and discussions with faculty, staff, current students, even opportunities for admitted students to meet one another. You can press *8 right now if you want to receive a link to the full list of events, or you can head directly to knox.edu/admitted student days to see that list of events. Once again, that's *3 if you want to ask questions now or at any point, and *8 for a link to a full list of upcoming events. As you're formulating and submitting your questions, I'd like to ask our president, Teresa Amott, to say just a few words of welcome. Teresa? Teresa, are you there?
Hello. Thank you, Paul. And thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight. I'm currently working from home in the Knox President's House, about a mile from campus. And I want to thank you all for taking the time for this call. I do hope that you and your families are all safe and healthy at this very difficult time. I know that choosing the right college for your student is one of the most important decisions that you and your student will make. And doing so in these times is surely more stressful than usual. So tonight, we're here to help. I know your student can earn a degree at thousands of colleges and universities, but I think you're on this call tonight because you want your student to attain something bigger and much more ambitious than just a degree. You want them to get an education, one that will prepare them for a successful career of meaningful work, for competitive graduate programs, and for a life of leadership and purpose in a very changing world. In these times, I find myself reflecting on what the world needs. And I think that the world needs Knox graduates more than ever before. This pandemic touches every field of human study: biology, economics, statistics, psychology, political science, law, medicine, ethics. And I know that out there, every day, there is a Knox graduate on the front lines of this pandemic who is fighting to save a life. I know that there are Knox graduates who are public servants, and they are seeking to keep schools and roads and social services functioning in this very different world. Every day, there's a Knox graduate working in a laboratory of diverse individuals, all with one singular goal: to find a treatment or a vaccine, maybe for this very own virus. And I know that every day, a Knox graduate who is a parent has become the social studies, math, science, and language arts teacher for their stay-at-home children. So those parents who are on this call today, I salute you. We have been collecting some of these stories from our alumni, and they are inspirational. But we know that here at Knox, we've educated students for exactly this moment, for the 21st century, by preparing them for jobs of the future, jobs that don't even exist right now. That's because we focus on nurturing the human skills, critical thinking, creativity, emotional intelligence, and curiosity. Our faculty engage directly with students, both in and out of the classroom, one-on-one. And our students put their knowledge to the test in hands-on applications and real-world situations. They live and learn in Knox's very diverse community, with others whose lives and stories are vastly different from their own. As we say, Knox provides a human-powered education, one that is uniquely suited for success in a rapidly evolving world, and one that prepares our graduates to find success no matter what the future brings. I do hope your student will join our community and help find a better world. So thank you for joining us tonight. Back to you, Paul.
Thanks so much, Teresa. Once again, as a reminder, if you have a question, please go ahead and dial star, press star 3, and we'll go ahead and take your question from you. We do see that we have a number of questions lined up, but before we begin, there's one last order of business. I'd like to introduce my colleagues, or actually have them introduce themselves tonight, and we'll start with you, Mike. Michael Schneider is our provost and dean of the college.
Hello, everyone. This is Mike Schneider. I'm delighted that you have joined us this evening, and I'm happy to talk about Knox. I've been a faculty member at Knox for 27 years. I happen to be a Japanese historian, and as Paul mentioned, I am currently provost and dean of the college, which means I'm responsible for the entire academic program.
And next, we have our Vice President for Student Development, Ann Ehrlich.
Hello, everybody. I'm happy to spend time with you this evening. As Vice President for Student Development, I am responsible for most of what happens outside of the classroom. So that includes departments such as residential life, health and counseling services, our career center, intercultural life, and other offices that support the academic program.
And our Director of Student Financial Services, Lee Brinson.
Hi, everyone. I'm so glad you're able to join us this evening. In my role as Director of Student Financial Services, my staff and I are responsible for helping you and your student afford a Knox education. So we help you with the financial aid aspect as well as the student billing.
And Scott Crawford, our Executive Director of the Center for Career Success.
Thank you, Paul. Yes, I've been at Knox for just about a year. I've been in the field for about 26. Our office really works with students to help them explore career possibilities, all the way to helping them get into grad school, jobs, internships, all the experience, all the decision-making, everything that goes into that is really our office. And we do that in a wide variety of ways. So I'm excited to talk to you all tonight.
Thank you, Scott. And our final panelist joining us tonight is actually the parent of a current student, Joy, who's a sophomore at Knox. Tanette Salazar is calling in from Denver, Colorado. Tanette?
Good evening. Looking forward to the opportunity to chat with some other parents. I know when my son Joey was trying to make his decision, we had lots of questions. So looking forward to see what I can do to answer some of those questions. But as Paul said, my son is a sophomore. He's on the baseball team and a double major in political science and business. And we hail from Denver, Colorado.
Very good. Thank you, Tonette. Thanks for joining us tonight. So those are the people who we have on the panel who are available to talk with you, to answer questions, to give their insights and experiences. So if you do have a question, again, please press star 3 to ask your question. Our first question tonight is actually getting right down to the nuts and bolts of things. And that's, Karen from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Karen, I've got you on the line next. So, Karen, go ahead.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you for having this tonight. This is really helpful. And my daughter, Annika, just last week decided that she is all in for Knox, and we are very thrilled for her. So as we're starting to think about, okay, well, what comes next? We're wondering if maybe there's a checklist for new students along with maybe timeframes and milestones so that she knows kind of what she needs to do and how to get prepared.
Ann Ehrlich, would you like to take that question?
I would be delighted to answer that question. And the answer is yes. There are several ways in which you and your daughter can get that information. One thing that you can do now is if you go to the new student page on the Knox website, we have important dates and milestones, including a checklist of what to bring to campus, maybe what not to bring to campus, and things like that. We also have a really comprehensive summer communication series where both you and your daughter are going to be receiving a series of emails focused on different things that you can be doing now to prepare for a successful transition to Knox. So that those will be arriving starting very shortly. And then if you're not a member of the Knox College Parents Facebook page, I recommend that you join that. That's where some really candid discussions happen. It's just parents and parents of prospective students. So you can get the lowdown on the tips and tricks that Knox parents who have had a successful transition so far might be able to share with you.
Wonderful. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Anne. Our next question comes from Lorraine in Eagle River, Wisconsin, who has a question for us about the dormitory system. Lorraine, you're on.
Hello. Thank you so much for doing this event tonight. I'm wondering if you can explain how the dormitory system works as far as the all-women's dorm and if my daughter would be able to live in the all-women's dorm for 4 years. My daughter has not been able to ascertain this information through the contacts she has there. Thank you.
Ann, did you want to take that one as well?
I'd love to. I feel so popular. Yes, your daughter can definitely live in an all-female residence hall for 4 years. So just to explain a little general context about the housing system, first-year students live in suites, all of them. A suite has generally about 16 first-year students that live in either a single or a double room. They share a bathroom and a living area, and they have a resident assistant who lives there in the suite with them. And your daughter will be able to preference if she wants to live in a single-gender suite or if she wants to live in a mixed-gender suite. And we have students who do both, and either option is perfectly acceptable, and she'll be able to preference that in her housing form that she'll fill out in the next few weeks. And then once she gets past that first year, she'll actually be going in and picking her own specific room that she wants to live in and who she wants to be living with for subsequent years.
Okay, so thank you for that information. Now, if I understand correctly, so then a suite, is that like a building of its own, or are there different suites within one building?
There's different suites within one building. So the buildings are pretty large and hold maybe, for example, 10 suites. But each suite has it's really a contained unit unto itself. There's a locked door to get into the suite, so nobody can access it if they're not a resident of that suite.
Okay, thank you. That's, I think, the information she was lacking. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You're
thank
welcome.
You, Lorraine. I do have one more housing-related question from Kimberly in Marshall, Michigan. Kimberly?
Yes, I just wanted to know if the athletes reside together, so at the soccer team, the football team, vice versa.
And?
That's really, it's up to the preference of the student. So we do have some members of a team that want to live together because they clearly have a common interest, they share a common schedule, it's easier to support each other to get up for that early morning practice. We have some members of teams that don't necessarily want to live with their teammates because they're interested in living with someone who's having a different type of Knox experience. Either answer is okay. The coaches talk with students individually about what their preference is, and if the students do want to live together, the coach will talk with them about, is there a specific teammate you want to live with? And if that's the case, they'll submit that list to the housing office.
Thank you, Kimberly. We're going to switch gears here in just a minute, but as a reminder, if you do have a question that you'd like to ask at any point during the call, simply press *3 on your keypad to let us know that you have a question. Our next question is from Mary in Urbana, Illinois. Mary, go ahead.
Yes, my question, first of all, my name is Mary Jeanette. Thanks for having me. My question is, what are the plans for the fall classes if the pandemic continues? Do you have plans in place for online classes? And if so, is there a cost for the room and board, or are the costs for online classes the same as the cost for regular classes if you were on campus?
Thank you, Mary Jeanette. Mike, would you like to handle that question?
Certainly, Paul. Thanks, Mary Jeanette, for a really great question. And I will confess that I have been in meetings today for most of the day answering your exact question. And what I mean by that is we have been thinking a lot about our academic program having to move to an online environment by circumstances, and then to start anticipating what the future will look like. And one of the ways I'd answer your question in the short sense is, yes, absolutely, we are planning various approaches to the fall, because we know that we ultimately will have to respond to the facts on the ground and what they're like through August and September. But I'd also add that we've learned a lot by making the transition that we've already made to an online environment in terms of ensuring that the Knox education, whether it's online or in person, is part of a kind of a four-year plan, is part of a kind of organized education that has many features. And that means playing to our strengths, that we have small classes, that we care about, you know, close interactions with students, and that we have to be nimble and resourceful in this environment. And so a lot of our conversations and our planning for the fall is in that vein. We certainly hope to be in a face-to-face environment. We expect that there will be a lot of complexity and a lot of conversation between now and then. But I also know that Knox faculty, and I'll just confess this as long as no one says anything to the Knox faculty, we love to talk about teaching. And so this is a great opportunity for us to talk about teaching. What is the essence of what we do and what we teach? And so as we think about fall, online, in person, some combination, we're gaming out those various possibilities, and it's a fascinating conversation about the purpose of an education, but we're also not losing sight of the larger prize, which is that there is an integrated education that students get over many terms. So that answers your question at the level of how we're preparing for the fall term. Paul, did you want to address the question about the finances of the fall term? Or Lee, maybe.
I might actually ask Lee to talk about how the finances
okay.
work.
Thank you. So for the finances of the fall term, students will first be receiving a billing statement in July. We have different payment plans set up for people and how to manage those costs for you. As far as the cost for the fall term, we're hoping, of course, for students to be on campus, and those are still those discussions are still occurring.
What I can tell you, as an example, if this spring during the spring term, we've moved classes online, and for the most students. Left the campus. We do have a small number of students who are on campus this spring living on in the residence halls in a very socially distanced sort of way and still taking some meals on campus. Those students are paying room and board, but for the students who are taking classes online, room and board is obviously not being charged to them because they're not living here on our campus. And certainly if that was the way that we need to begin the fall term, we would be approaching it, I know, in much the same way. So thank you very much, Mary Jeanette, for that for those questions. Okay.
You're welcome.
I do want to, and there are more questions about the pandemic and the way in which that's affecting things this year and into next. But before we move on with any additional questions, we do have a poll. We had a couple polls we're going to conduct tonight. The first of them actually reflects very much on the effect of the current pandemic and the events in our world and how those events have affected the timetable for making decisions with regard to college for next fall. So what I'd like you to do is to have your finger ready for your keypad on your phone, and we'd like to know if your student still plans to make their decision, their college decision by May 1st, please press 1. If they're planning to make the decision by June 1st, please press 2. And if your student isn't sure when they'll make their college decision, please press 3. So again, 1 if they plan to make the decision by May 1st, 2 by June 1st, and 3 if they're just not sure at this point. And we will leave the poll open here for just a minute. It looks like we do have a lot of votes coming in here. And at this point, what I can tell you is it appears that about 58% of you, 59% of you are planning to make the decision by May 1st. So most of you are still trying to make this decision in the next 10 days. About 25% hope to get the decision made by the 1st of June. And about 16% aren't quite sure yet, which is also a very reasonable answer under the circumstances. So once again, just as a reminder, press *3 to ask a question. Miriam in Horseheads, New York, you had a question as well related to the start of classes in the fall.
Yes, I did. Yes. So thank you. Thank you for doing this. So I just wanted to give a little bit of context first, so you know like where the question is coming from. So first of all, I am a Knox alum, and so is my husband, and we actually have 3 generations of family members that have attended Knox. So Knox is very dear to our heart, and you know we had a really good experience there. So I'm also an economist, and I'm also a professor at a small liberal arts college. So my question is kind of coming from a bunch of different, some of these angles, because I know as an alum that, small liberal arts colleges in general are just having a hard time, even before this whole thing hit. And now with the pandemic, I know that there's likely going to be budget cuts. I know at my own college there are likely going to be. And I believe that, Knox might be also planning some for next year, just based on some communication that was sent to alums. So I guess my question is more, I'm a little concerned about how that might impact the quality of the offerings over the next few years, just based on some of the other choices my son has at this point. So I guess if somebody can answer that, it's a really tough question, and I'm sorry that I have to ask it, but that's kind of one of the things that's been on my mind.
Very good. I'm going to ask, are there any panelists that would prefer to answer that question? Mike and Teresa, perhaps?
Mike or I could jump in right now. Why don't I jump in? Miriam, I'm also an economist, as you know. So
yes, I do. Yes,
so I would love the opportunity to talk to you about the economics of small liberal arts colleges. There's a lot to talk about there. I would say to you, and you probably know this from your own Knox experience, that one of the principles that we always hold up in any moment of budget hardship is that we try to spare the academic program, that we, to the extent possible, we want to keep the academic program harmless. So we have certainly made budget cuts. We have, like many, many schools, once the students left, we did not have work for all the people that are usually there to tend to the needs of, 1,200 students. But we have tried in every budget decision we make to spare the academic program to the extent possible. And that would remain our guiding principle as we move forward. We do not anticipate changes in program offerings, except in those areas where, frankly, the pandemic leads us. Study abroad. We did mm-hmm. have budget savings this past year in study abroad, not because we, at all thought that study abroad was less important. If anything, it's more important. And yet the students were not interested, in going abroad under these circumstances mm-hmm. or couldn't, were just prevented. So we have had some budget savings unintentionally. We will find others. I think we're all learning in this online environment and working from home that there are efficiencies.
we didn't know we could achieve that are helping us hold the line on cost. But these are difficult times. We also have very loyal alumni. You're one of them. And you know that our alums are stepping up with fundraising, and so that our annual fund, for example, is ahead this year. So there are other sources of revenue to which we can go to help us fulfill that commitment to the academic program. But again, okay. Happy to talk with you anytime.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much. The next caller is Jennifer. And Jennifer, I'm not sure where you're calling from, but Jennifer, if you have a question tonight, we'd love to hear from you.
Hi. Jennifer? Calling from Ottawa, Illinois.
Very good.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay,
great. Go ahead
great.
With your question.
Thank you so much. My daughter has already decided that Knox is where she wants to go for school. When she originally applied, she was informed that pre-med students could still apply their junior year at George Washington and not have to take the MCAT. She's since been told different. Can somebody answer what is the correct answer for that?
Mike, I'm going to throw this question to you.
Yeah, thank you, Jennifer, for your question. I think, so the George Washington University early admission program to the School of Medicine, the Health Sciences, does require taking the MCAT at a later date. That is to say, it is not part of the admission process per se. That is to say, students complete the 2 years of schooling, they take the requisite courses, they have to maintain the minimum GPA. These are all parts of the admission process. To complete the admission, that is to say, to satisfy the terms that George Washington University has set down, a student does need to complete the MCAT before entering. But that is maybe the distinction there is that requirement is at the back end rather than part of the admission process per se. Does that help understand the distinction there?
That was perfect. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Jennifer. I do want to point out that we received a number of questions that were submitted in text and emails through the form. And so I thought I would take one of those questions now. We got a question from Monica in Arizona, parent of Chandler. And the question was, when and how will an advisor help select her son's courses in his first year? How often will he meet with his advisor after that? Again, sorry, Mike, you want to take that question as well?
No need to be sorry. And thank you for the question. I love talking about advising, and we just were having a long conversation about how to increase the number of contacts between advisors and students. So the first contact between advisors and entering students occurs during the summer when we have an opportunity for students to interact with advisors, to see the course selection, to opportunities to submit course preferences in the middle of summer. In this case, we have on-campus advising and virtual advising. Let's face it, we're probably going to do a little bit more of the virtual this time. But and we've had advising sessions in Chicago and elsewhere to provide those opportunities during the summer. That usually happens in mid-July. The very first formal meeting that students have on campus is with their academic advisor, which is the first point of contact, and they go have dinner with the faculty member and the group of advisees that advisor is working with. And then the next day there is an advising session. And then after that, we require that academic advisors and students meet at least once a term. We're, of course, always looking for ways to increase that. So for example, there are group advising sessions. There are opportunities for people to get advising support inside of the required first year course, which we call first year preceptorial. And of course, students can will sometimes hear from their advisors, how's it going? Stop by if you want to. And of course, students can always seek out their academic advisor during the course of the term. Just, you know, send an email or a text to say, I just want to talk about my academic program. So there are lots of opportunities. It is not meant to be just a single connection, but a connection that starts during the summer and continues robustly throughout the first year. At the end of the second year, most students at that point declare their a major and then are usually reassigned then to an advisor in that particular academic major. But they don't have to lose touch with their first academic advisor. They can still go to that person for advice. So that's a quick rundown of how our advising system works overall. Again, something we are always thinking about a lot is how to increase those contacts and give students the opportunity to seek support on all kinds of decisions they're making throughout the 4 years.
Very good. Thank you, Mike. The next question, going back to the telephones, comes from Scott in Chandler, Arizona. Scott, you want to go ahead and ask your question?
Yeah, my question is, my son actually just signed he hasn't signed yet, but he just committed to Knox for baseball. And we wanted to know what it was like for parents there from a far distance, as far as if they felt in touch with the program and that there's easy access for us to maybe see games or things like that.
Does someone on the panel want to talk about how to stay in touch with their athletes from a distance and how to watch games, how they're broadcast?
I can do that as a parent.
As a parent of a baseball player from afar, I'm happy to chime in. And Scott, I must admit that my son is the one who gave your son his tour and had lunch with him, and he was very excited to see he committed on Instagram yesterday. So we had a big conversation about that. Congratulations. It is amazing, the local parents, what they do to help you feel like you are connected. There is some online streaming of games from Knox, as well as some of the other schools where they play away. Some places are a little more sophisticated than others. Some are a zip-tied video camera to the backstop. But you know what? As long as I can see my kid, I'm okay with that. And there's also Game Changer that the team has, and so you can watch that live as that continues. There's parents that are closer locally that do an amazing job of photographing and upload those to the Knox baseball site, so you probably get better pictures from other people than you might be able to take for yourself. The stats are always up, and you get lots of information back and forth. And there's an annual spring break baseball tournament in Florida where a number of parents, if they're able to, will head down there. We feel like we have a great close-knit community on the baseball team. We see the parents at parents' weekends and at different games, and the last home game of the season is also kind of a senior-type banquet where we try to make sure that we're there for that year-end activity. So we are friends with parents from other sports as well, too. And so it's a community that feels a little bit more like high school or club team than the experiences that I have other friends who have with larger schools. So you really do feel like you're a part of the community and a part of the team, even though you're quite a distance away.
That's great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Scott. I appreciate the question. We do have a second poll question for tonight, and I'm curious to know where Knox fits among your son and daughter's college choices. So again, if you want to put your finger towards that keypad, and if Knox is your student's top choice at this point, press 1. If Knox is among the top 2 choices, press 2. Among the top 3 choices, press 3. And if Knox is among the top 4 choices or more, press 4. So 1 if it's top choice, 2 if it's number 2 among the top 2, 3 among top 3, and 4 if it's 4 or more. Give it just a second here on the poll. I'm actually pleased to see that so many of you at this point are seeing Knox as the first choice for your son or daughter. It looks like about 66% of you actually are seeing Knox as the first choice. So that's really, really good to see. Only about 3% of you, or 4% of you have 4 or more choices that your wrestling with. So obviously there's a little bit of sorting out of decisions that will need to be made over the course of the coming days, particularly if you're among the folks trying to make decisions the next next couple of weeks or so. I do want to go to one more question that we have that was submitted in advance in writing. And this question is from Joyce in Delaware, whose son Baraka is taking a look at Knox, and is wondering, what is the culture of Knox? Does it promote diversity? And coming from African parents, from an African parents home, how will he fit in? So a question about diversity.
Well, this is Anne, and I would be happy to answer that question. It's obvious that Knox is a very diverse community. That's something that we're really proud of. It's one of our greatest strengths and one that we're recognized nationally for. But we realize that doesn't automatically translate into inclusivity. So those are issues that we work on campus on a daily basis to ensure that every student feels comfortable and is afforded the same opportunities for success, respect, and a sense of belonging. So our students hold us to very high standards in this area, as they should. I can share some of the inclusivity efforts that are already in place and some that we're working on. We have departments of intercultural life and spiritual life on campus that are housed in our brand new beautiful building, the Hope Center, which stands for the House of Peace and Equity, a name I just love, which is actually named by students in our Multicultural Student Advisory Council. We have intercultural peer educators who are student leaders that provide workshops and trainings for other students around issues of inclusion and social justice. In the classroom, we have credit-bearing intergroup dialogue courses. In addition to a campus-wide day of dialogue where classes are not held, and instead students, faculty, and staff are invited to have honest conversations around issues of social justice. Recently, we've just started working on Mike and I were just in a meeting discussing this a couple hours ago, a refocusing of the first few weeks of our first year seminar to focus on issues of racial inclusivity. We recently added a staff member who's dedicated to supporting LGBTQ students. And we're in the process of rolling out for summer and fall a more comprehensive diversity and inclusion education program for faculty and staff. So it's, I think, a strength of ours, but we are by no means perfect in that area, like no college is, and we're continuing to work on it actively every day.
Okay, very good. Anyone else want to add to that question? Okay, otherwise, I'll go to Lily from here in Illinois, who also has a question related to life of students. Lily, go ahead.
Hi, I'm actually a student who's enrolled in Knox, who just enrolled in Knox a while ago. And I was wondering, I really would like to start a Circle K community service club at Knox, and I was wondering what all I would have to do to start a club at Knox.
Ian?
Yes, I'd be happy to answer that. Hi, Lily. That's great. I think that's an organization that would fit in really well at Knox. We have a couple service organizations already, as you might know, but we don't have a Circle K. Starting an organization at Knox is really easy, as evidenced by the fact that we have over 80 of them currently. All you'd need to do is find a few other students that are interested in being part of that organization, enough to have your basic officer structure to run the group. And then you would just get in touch with our campus life office, and they would guide you through a mission statement and a constitution and figuring all of that out and help you find a faculty or staff advisor. You'd then be able to go to our student government and request a budget from them, so you'd have money to be able to do events and service activities. So it's really easy, and I think that's a great idea.
Okay, thank you. Our next question comes from Sylvia in Minneapolis, Minnesota, who also has a very timely question. Sylvia?
Hi. I was just wondering, My daughter's very interested in going to Knox, and she's very interested in sciences. But one of the things that's really hard to do online is lab work. And I was wondering how Knox has been managing the teaching of lab classes. Hello?
Mike, do you want to handle that question?
Yes, I would love to. And Sylvia, thank you for that question. It's a great question. And I know it's an especially great question because every chance I get to ask my science colleagues, I ask them this question because we're not meeting face-to-face either. So I don't get a chance to wander the halls looking for examples of what they're doing in labs. So I've had a lot of conversations in our current environment. And a couple of things that I've observed is that one thing is that, well, the faculty are trying as much as possible to ensure that they teach the skills that they know students will need when we get back into the real lab environment. That is to say, you can shift certain trainings, certain types of activities into a virtual space so that you learn how to do calculations, how with regard to a bench experiment, how you add a certain number of grams of a certain ingredient, how you run high pressure, liquid chromatograph. I mean, there's all kinds of things that you can teach the basic skills and understanding of how to do the calculations. But that's some conscious decisions, again, about a kind of a program over many terms where we're shifting certain things into that virtual space where there's a lot of experimentation with virtual labs, but these are preparatory for getting into the real lab space, which we know students will have opportunities in abundance. The other thing that I know my colleagues are doing is frankly just innovating, figuring out ways to connect students as much as possible to the actual in-class lab experience. And just to cite one small example that I thought was incredibly clever is there's an electronics component to one of the physics labs, and there's really no substitute for actually messing around with the electronic components. But since the lab is not terribly large, because again, we have small classes and small labs, the faculty member is just mailing the electronic components to each of the students in the class. And then they're going to get together online virtually and just do the experiments and do the regular lab, but in this virtual space. And I know that that's not a solution for every lab. We're not going to send large, powerful scanning electron microscopes in the mail at $400,000 a piece, but we are able to be flexible and responsive to ensuring that students have a connection to the space that they're in. And again, it's a recognition that the online experience is hopefully transitory, but also is integrated into real online hands-on experiences that we know we can deliver on campus. So that's in part, those are some of the solutions, but you're right to point out what a challenge this is. But again, there's a lot of resourcefulness and clever approaches to this on campus right now.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Sherry in Crested Butte, Colorado. Sherry, would you like to ask your question?
Yes, I would. Our son Liam actually put his deposit in today, so he will be attending Knox. We're very excited about that. So I was just curious a little bit about the first year class. What that looks like, is it all three terms or just the first term? And then in addition to that, like how many choices does the student receive of classes that they're interested in taking?
Mike?
Yeah, hi, Sherry. Thank you for that. So the first year experience has many different features to it, and maybe even Anne will want to chime in to talk about the first year experience, but I will certainly focus on the first year class, the one specific required class. It's just in the first term, and it's a course where we have approximately 14 different seminars that students can choose from, and students in the summer get an opportunity to kind of rank their top choices and maybe pick one that they definitely don't want to be in, and send that in. And we try to give everyone their first or second choice in this. And the seminars are organized around big questions, you know, that are really central to the liberal arts college mission. So what is water? Why does it matter? What is love? Why does it matter? What is rhetoric? How does it affect people in terms of, you know, mobilizing and activating people to be persuaded by words? They take on big questions, but they do it in a way that's designed to make students feel that they're part of our community, a community of learners where faculty and students are working together to think about not only what are the answers to these questions, but what are the other questions that they lead people to think about. Along the way, we're trying to work on pretty foundational skills that everyone's going to need to be successful for 4 years. Speak with confidence, write with confidence, think with confidence. These are part of the training that starts in that course, but they're designed to be small seminars that, 15 to 17 students, with the idea that this is where one builds those kind of foundational skills. But that's just one then piece of the first year experience. Students take then two other courses in the first term, and then nine for the entire year. And so the first year preceptorial course fits into then a whole bunch of co-curricular activities that are also designed to expand students' work within a community of learners, learn how to share their views, as Anne already mentioned earlier. What does it mean to work in a diverse community? What does it mean to learn in a diverse community? How do we learn from each other? Those are also features of this first year experience, many of features of which happen outside of the classroom.
Yeah, I can chime in for a moment. Yeah, I would love to chime in and add a little bit more. The first year experience for some of your students might include participation in one of our summer bridge programs, either the TRIO or the SPARK program that you'll be getting communication about later this term. Those programs will help students build relationships with faculty and get accustomed to college level work prior to the beginning of the academic year. Other students will choose to participate in shorter sessions in person or virtually at various points during the summer. Certainly, new student orientation is a program that all students participate in together. It's the first time they'll come together as an entire first-year class. We also have what's called the residential curriculum, which is designed to teach students in their residence hall environment some of those personal development and personal management skills that they need to be successful academically and professionally, like time management and intercultural communication. And then finally, some of your students will choose to participate in what are known as our living learning communities, where students can actually choose to live in a suite with that first year preceptorial course, with the students from their course. So they all live together. The faculty member that teaches that course actually comes into the residence hall sometimes to have extra programs and advising sessions and instruction. To really enhance that relationship and enhance the ability of students to discuss what's going on in class, outside of class.
That's amazing. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Sherry. I've got another question that was submitted in advance, which is from Clara in California. Please discuss on-campus medical care available for students and hospital care available in or near Galesburg. Anne, you probably have a lot of insights into that. Tanette, you might have some thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, this is Anne, and I would be happy to get us started on that. Certainly a really timely question. I do oversee health services. We have a health clinic on campus, which is much like a prompt care that you might visit in your own community. It's staffed by a wonderful nurse practitioner and also a registered nurse. And it's overseen by a doctor from one of the two hospitals in town. So students can walk in to health services or they can make an appointment. Our health services staff can diagnose and treat acute medical issues like the flu, strep, respiratory issues, minor injuries, and so on. And if there's more complex lab testing needed, we work closely with one of those two local hospitals. For evenings and weekends, there is prompt care affiliated with the hospital, as well as certainly two emergency rooms if needed. We provide transportation in the form of taxi vouchers to students that need to get to a medical facility or a pharmacy and don't have their own transportation, although we do have local pharmacies that deliver to campus. I really trust our medical professionals on campus. Our nurse practitioner and doctor have both been practicing in this community for a really long time. They're well connected. I would trust them with the health of my family. They've been coordinating closely and proactively with our local county health department in the wake of COVID-19. And they've planned out a number of scenarios, none of which I hope we ever have to encounter in the case of cases of COVID-19 on campus. I'll tell you a story briefly. We had an international student who is one of the small number of students who wasn't able to go home, and so she's staying with us. And she developed a fever one night, and she was really nervous about what that meant. Thankfully, she's fine. It was not coronavirus, but our nurse practitioner actually moved onto campus, left her family, and moved into a residence hall for a couple of nights to make that student feel more comfortable with having somebody that she could trust and go to close by. And so that's just one example of the level of care in addition to expertise that I think those staff provide. Jeanette, I don't know if you wanted to add anything from your own student's experience.
Sure, I'd be happy to. I think you already covered, Anne, how some of the local pharmacies deliver, which is a really nice, what I would call a small town added benefit, because we don't have that where we are. And it makes it a lot easier for your student to get their medicine. On top of that, it was mentioned earlier that parent Facebook page is a resource. What Anne said, the medical staff is top notch, bar none. But I have seen parents ask questions about a student needing an oral surgeon or an ear, nose, and throat specialist. And the recommendations on there have always been fantastic and a great resource, not just for medical issues in Galesburg, but also for any questions that you might have on a whole host of issues, including traveling, how do I get my child to the airport? What does the dorm room look like? It has been a really great resource to have. And so I encourage any of you parents to hop onto that Facebook page for this question and other questions.
Thank you. We've actually had a lot of wonderful questions asked tonight, and we could probably go on for another hour if we had the time. I do have one last question, and we will get to all of the questions that we didn't have a chance to answer here during the call. We will certainly follow up on those questions over the course of the coming days so that we can talk with you about all of those questions. But one last question before we end, and I'm going to ask each of the panelists to respond very briefly to this question. And it comes from Ellen in Colorado. And her question is, what are you most proud of about Knox? Tony, would you want to start off with that?
Sure, I'd be happy to. You know, as a parent, when you're looking at helping your child make the best decision for what they're going to do after high school, you spent 18 years preparing them for this. One of the things that I appreciated about Knox when we were going through the search process, and even today, is what you see is what you get. And I felt that Knox was genuinely interested in my child and that they knew him as an individual. They wanted him there. And I didn't get that feeling from any other school that he was looking at. And that doesn't end when they accept admission or when they enroll. It continues where they're checking on him. They continue to communicate with me. You know, the admission counselor would say, hey, I'm going to be in Colorado. Do you need me to bring anything back for your son? And the communication is, outside of a pandemic, is impressive. When there was the polar vortex, we felt like we knew exactly what was happening on campus and felt very safe and confident with what the university was doing. Now with everything that's going on and the shift to online, we have felt absolutely in the loop and confident with what is taking place. And so for an institution to communicate like that in times of crisis as well on a regular basis, just reaffirmed for my son and for us as parents that Knox is absolutely the right place for him. And so for parents and students who are trying to figure this out, if Knox felt like the right place before life changed, it will be the right place moving forward.
Thank you very much, Jeanette. I'm just going to call on people. Scott Crawford, our Executive Director for the Center for Career Success, what are you most proud of?
So from my perspective, it's how much students care about each other. We are posting right now on our Instagram where students are getting offers. And as soon as I post one of those, students start going nuts on that and congratulating each other. And you can tell that they really do feel proud of that student that got that. And so it's really a great community to work in. I love talking with students who truly want to change the world and do wonderful things. And so that's exciting. And to me, it's just a very positive atmosphere. And it's a wonderful group of students to work with.
Thank you, Scott. Lee Brinson in Student Financial Services.
Yes, I'm here thinking of what makes me proud, and I have so many things I could go on about. But I think what I'm most proud of with being in higher education for over 20 years is how transparent everyone is in the Knox community. Everyone welcomes each other with open arms, shares what's going on, and it just makes me really proud to be part of the Knox family.
Thank you, Lee. How about Anne?
You know, they say in times of crisis, people become more themselves, and that can be for the good or for the bad. I think that's true of the Knox community, and it's absolutely for the good. To jump in on what Scott was saying, this community really cares about each other, and I've been so impressed with the extent to which faculty, staff, and students have all risen to the occasion. I mean, faculty, I see their Facebook posts and their offline conversations, and you'd think they might want to not talk about online teaching, but they're there on Facebook talking to each other about how to improve their online teaching and asking each other for advice. Staff are realizing that student schedules are so different now, and so they have no problem putting on an online event for students to come in and talk to them at 10 o'clock at night. And I think the most impressive thing has honestly been the students and how selfless they've been. So we set up a relief fund for students that were experiencing financial hardship as a result of COVID-19, and we asked them to tell us how much money they needed. And almost all of them said, you know, I just need a little bit. Whatever you can give me, I don't want to take away from another student. I realize there might be another need, and so I don't want to put my needs ahead of anyone else, even though I'm really struggling. And it's really been beautiful.
Thank you, Anne. Mike?
Well, one of the problems of having to go last is that people took your good answers. Isn't that what we always say in class? Well, as provost and dean of the college, I being responsible for the academic program, all of the faculty and academic staff that were asked to very quickly, within the short span of 2 weeks, to take the Knox education online, I certainly approached that at a personal level with a certain amount of trepidation. It's not what we normally do. But I didn't ever once doubt that my colleagues wouldn't do it. I didn't doubt for a second that they wouldn't throw their backs into it. And it was really, you know, as Anne suggested, people are still talking about online education after they've spent the entire day. It's exhausting work, especially to try to deliver a Knox education in an online environment. And people went through it with a great deal of commitment to the task. And I was just so proud of that achievement. And the other thing that really struck me about this entire experience was we have students who sit on our elected faculty committees, and so two students sit on the faculty executive committee, which is responsible for a lot of important decisions. And we met the very first day of classes, and I had to ask, so how's it going? Give us your, these are students who are asked to give their honest opinion to faculty, many years their senior, all the time. And they just said, there were some struggles, but it's the Knox faculty. I know we'll work on it. I know we'll participate. We'll make it better. And that level of commitment to the enterprise goes both ways, students to faculty and faculty to students. And I, as Anne suggested, in this moment, we could have seen multiple outcomes, but we saw one that just seems like a very Knox sort of outcome. It reaffirms one's sense of why this place is successful, and it was a good demonstration of it.
And last but certainly not least, Teresa, did you want to say just a few words about what you're most proud of?
Yes, my experience is different because I'm able to meet Knox people from ages 18 to 95. I go out into the world and I meet with Knox alums. And I am very proud of that whole body of Knox alums, you know, 15,000 people across the world and what they've done. And one of the things that has really, it's really stayed with me as an abiding characteristic of Knox, the Knox alumni. These are the most accomplished people you could imagine, entrepreneurs. Some of them are millionaires. Some of them are physicians or scientists who hold patents, who have made extraordinary, findings in their field. Many of them are teachers. Many of them are community volunteers. And no matter who they are or how accomplished they are, they all have a kind of a humble sense that they are who they are because of others. And they are connected to the rest of the Knox community. They're connected to their faculty, connected to their advisors, to their staff, people who helped them when they were at Knox. And then 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years later, they still remember the people who helped them at Knox and who helped them become who they are. And it's moving. It's very moving. You don't see it when you're on campus. But when you leave the campus and you meet Knox alums many years later, you realize that a Knox education really is for life. It's for a lifetime. So that's what I'm most proud of.
Thank you, Teresa. And I want to thank all of our panelists. And I also want to really thank all of you who called in tonight or who accepted our phone call and listened in on the call for sharing your thoughts, for sharing your questions. If you still have a question that hasn't been asked, perhaps you just thought of a question as you were listening to some of those final remarks by our panelists. Please stay on the line at the end of the call, and there'll be an opportunity to leave your question, to have it recorded, and then we will follow up with you over the course of the days ahead. And as I said earlier, we'll also follow up on those of you that were in queue to ask a question, and we'll make sure that you get those answers over the course of the coming today. Or days. One important reminder to repeat what I said at the beginning. Today kicks off our virtual admitted student days. Now through April 30th, we're offering opportunities, a series actually of virtual events featuring faculty, staff, students, Q&As, virtual meetups, and more. You can press *8 now and you'll receive a link to a full list of the events. Or you can head directly to our website, knox.edu/admitted student days, and see all of those events that are happening between now and the end of the month. As your son or daughter begins to make their final decisions in the course of the coming days and weeks, they and you will undoubtedly or might very well have additional questions. Don't hesitate to contact your admission counselor in the Office of Admission. They're here to help. You can find their contact information also on our website, under the Meet the Staff page in the admission section of the website. Again, they're here to help. Call them, text them, set up a virtual meeting with them. There's a link to set up a virtual meeting if you'd like. And once again, once you do make a final decision, or your sons and daughters make a final decision, be sure to submit the $300 enrollment deposit to secure a space in the fall class. And of course, let other colleges know that they won't be enrolling there as well. To submit your enrollment deposit, you can do so on our website at knox.edu/yes. We hope to see many of you, hopefully all of you, along with your sons and daughters, during move-in day on campus this fall. For now, best wishes and good night from Knox College and from Galesburg. Thank you very much.